Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Robert Neville Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark, with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, The Legend of Hell House. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the old podcast. Hey, Phyllis.
Hey, Rob.
Glad you could join us in the lounge tonight.
Indeed. In Hell House.
In the Hell House Lounge. Before you get started, there's a, you know, if you're in the area, Tidewater, Hampton Roads, Virginia, whatever they call it these days, there's some really cool stuff coming up for the Halloween season. Coming up on September 29th at the Narrow Expanded Cinema, Suspiria is being shown. Regular showing, I think about 9 o'clock or so. Then the very next day is a late show, is Romero's Day of the Dead. Man, to be able to see that in theater, it's going to be awesome. Next few weeks, they're going to be showing Nightmare on Elm Street as a, I think it was a late show, and then The Gate, and then Phantasm on the 14th, which I can't wait to see, and a regular showing at 9 o'clock on the Flick It Fridays program on October 20th is going to be Evil Dead 2. So come out and see that stuff. It's going to be cool. And don't forget, also, on Saturday, October 7th, is Monster Fest in Chesapeake, Virginia. It's going to be awesome. It's the one-day HorrorCon event, and we got lots of horror hosts are going to be there. Dr. Madblood, Mr. Lobo, oh, God, lots of them from the OSI 74 Roku channel. It's going to be really cool. A whole day of fun panels, events, 70 tables worth of vendors, live music, and at night, more live music, and a horror double feature of Plague of the Zombies and Romero's original Dawn of the Dead. And that's free. So come out and see that. Join us, won't you? Now that that public service announcement is over, back to the topic at hand, The Legend of Hell House. You know, I was thinking, when we were talking about doing this podcast, and after watching the movie, I think we even talked about it a little bit, about I was trying to figure out why I like this movie so much.
Well, it's a little slow in places, but at the same point, I was always interested.
Yeah.
It's real moody. I always wanted to know what the hell is going on.
It's real moody and atmospheric. Mm-hmm. But it's not, there's no action. I mean, you know, there's no jump scares really. It's not rolling along.
No, but it's tense now and again when it kind of needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does create a mood the whole time.
It does. Very atmospheric.
And it's shot well.
Yes.
There's some really cool cinematography in it, some cool shots. And speaking of that, the director was John Hugh, or Who, H-O-U-G-H. Not sure exactly how he pronounced it, but, and I was thinking, watching it, you know, it felt kind of like a Hammer film, but it wasn't a Hammer film.
Right.
You know. But the reason it did, well, one of the reasons was the producer, jumped to that real quick, James H. Nicholson. Not that he did Hammer, but he came, now actually I'm going back and forth, I should be talking about John Hugh first. But anyway, what on James Nicholson? The producer came from American International Pictures. And if you know American International Pictures, you know, he produced, oh geez, too long a list to list everything. Okay, but I'm just going to hit some highlights. Blackula, the two Fives movies, Dunwich Horror, Die Monster Die, Planet of the Vampires, Panic in the Year Zero, and a couple of dozen other movies. When he was with AIP.
All good stuff.
All good stuff. All good stuff. So that's probably one of the reasons why I like it, because he had a hand in it, you know, and I like all those movies. Now, I'll get back to the director. What I was saying about having a Hammer feel, and I was kind of wondering why, well, he directed Twins of Evil, which is, you know, a fun Hammer film, but he also directed, to give you his broad spectrum of his directing career, Twins of Evil, Escape for to Witch Mountain. And he directed a lot of other stuff, but these three movies just show you the broad and Hell House, and then Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, which is if you haven't seen that, it's a kind of criminals on the run picture from the 70s and involved this car. Well, they're in this car the whole time.
Mountain, sort of.
Yeah, you know, that's yeah, kind of sort of. I always thought doing for a Phantasmo double feature, it'd be great to show Vanishing Point and Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry.
And Witch Mountain?
No, that's a triple feature. because Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry and Vanishing Point both end kind of the same way and badly.
Yeah.
Kind of those downer 70s endings, you know, where you're like, aw. But back to this movie, though. Talk about the cast real quick before we get into the movie some more. Because I think that right there, the cast is probably one of the things that kind of kept us really interested, because it was a good cast.
It was a good cast.
They all, the four main characters all had charisma.
Yeah.
You know, they were interesting to watch, and they, you know, did
only one of them kind of annoyed me, but she was still good. Well,
yeah, but she was kind of supposed to be that way, I think.
Yeah, her character. I guess so.
First off, just knock it out of the way, Roddy McDowell. I'd watch that man read the phone book.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's,
you know,
amazing.
Anything he's in, he elevates it. You know, he's fun to watch no matter what it is. And, you know, you're constantly watching him on the screen. But I'm hearing apes whenever he speaks. Yeah. Turn away, close my eyes, and I look back and I'm like, Galen? You know, Cornelius? Caesar? What? No. Oh, it's Roddy.
Well, sometimes you just can't help it.
Yeah, I was expecting him to go. Sometimes we cocked his head, just go, You know?
It's funny how many of his own mannerisms actually made it into apes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you see him without the makeup doing this, it's like, okay, he was those guys.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Roddy alone, you're getting your money's worth in the picture.
Absolutely.
Okay. But moving on, Pamela Franklin, who was the, well, Roddy's character, he was a physical
medium,
which he manifests physical, when he contacts spirits, they can manifest physical things through him.
Yeah,
I guess is what
meaning that things in our world can physically be manipulated.
Yeah. Now, Pamela Franklin's character, she was a mental medium, which she would supposedly would just make contact voices and feel
them
and stuff.
They could speak through her, blah, blah, blah. But supposedly, and nothing should physically move or be touched around her.
No, and she was also a religious spiritualist.
Right.
Her character was one that we thought was kind of annoying, though, right?
Yeah, I guess that speaks to how good of an actor she is, because she really freaking annoyed me.
And she was played kind of an innocent, more or less, kind of.
I guess so. And that hair annoyed the crap out of me the entire damn movie.
Then Clive Revel was the physicist.
Yes.
Who brought the machine to drain the electromagnetic energy.
The machine.
That was supposed to drain the electromagnetic energy out of the house, which that's what he thought was the ghostly presence, which is residual electromagnetic energy.
Yeah, not actually ghosts or spirits at all, just electromagnetic energy.
Now, Clive Revel has a huge list of credits, probably about as long as Roddy. And up until last year was the last credit I saw, was still doing voices for video games and cartoons and stuff.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. But the couple things that we are concerned with that he did was he was in the first three episodes or so of Batman the Animated Series, he was Alfred.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he was the voice of the Emperor in Empire Strikes Back. Ha ha. So he's got that going for him. The next on the cast list of the main four, Gail Honeycutt was playing Revel's wife in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Long list of credits, just like Pamela Franklin. It was all over TV in the 70s, the late 60s through the 70s and into the 80s. I think Gail Honeycutt was even doing stuff up through in the 90s a lot. Any genre show, regular show, whatever, they did an episode of it. Nothing really horror movies or cult movies really to speak of that I can recall with her. But Pamela Franklin, though, was in Food of the Gods, which is one we ought to talk about sometime. Maybe do an episode like Nature Gone Wild films or something, or you know, Mother Nature's Revenge episode or something. Could do Day of the Animals and Food of the Gods and all that kind of stuff. One thing with this we got to talk about is who wrote the screenplay.
Who wrote the screenplay,
and who wrote
Rob?
The original novel?
Who wrote the original novel, Rob? I know this answer.
Thanks for asking, Phyllis. Good thing you were here. Richard Matheson.
We love him.
Oh, man. Richard Matheson wrote I Am Legend, tons of other stuff. But I always find in anything like a Night Gallery or Twilight Zone or any of those stuff like that, shows where it's an episode I'm kind of quirky and I really like it. And then I look and say, Richard Matheson wrote it. Okay, of course I do.
No wonder you like it. Yeah, I have yet to find anything with his name on it that I haven't liked.
Yeah. Yeah. The original novel, which I need to find now, is just called Hell House.
Hmm.
And in the original novel, in the movie, it was kind of mostly a British team of paranormal researchers go in. In the novel, it's an American team. So they changed it because it was a British production company and all that. And just, you know, and the actors they got, too.
Well, it's funny. I'd really like to know. I always like to know the differences between the books and the movies.
Yeah.
Always. but I'm curious what their reasoning behind going in to the Hell House was in the book. Because in the movie, it's so
well
glossed over. It's really quick in the beginning.
Yeah,
the
what
one
they
guy,
said, what they sent them in there for was to prove survival after death.
Right. And the, basically
the one guy means
that
the presence of ghosts.
Well, right. But I mean, the one guy that sends them in there, the guy with all the money.
Yeah.
I don't remember why he wants to know. Like, was there some underlying reason? None of that really matters to the plot of the story.
No,
I was just curious.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember why he wants them to prove it, but
he,
does. And he's offered them a ton of money each to prove it, stay
for like
4 days, 4 or 5 days, and get proof.
Right.
And Clive Revel's determined that he's just going to electromagnetic energy and cleanse the house. Roddy's character was part of the first team that went in 20 years before.
Right.
And he was the only surviving member that didn't go mad or die.
Yeah, everybody else
crippled
from,
or something.
Right, yeah, he said everybody else from his team either killed themselves, was somehow killed, or went crazy, or was crippled.
Yeah. Oh, real quick, going back to the book, though, for a second. I found out doing a little research, Matheson, for the screenplay, actually toned down a lot of the graphic violence.
Really?
Yeah, and the sexual atmosphere and scenes from the novel. It toned it down to give the movie more of a brooding atmosphere.
Well, that's interesting.
Which it does kind of have. It does have a kind of a foreboding, brooding kind of the whole time, like we were talking about. Which is, I guess, what makes it interesting. And now I'm dying to read the novel to find out, that, like you said, what the differences are.
Yeah, I can see why they toned down the violent part for a British film.
Yeah.
But not the sexual part. Because normally that's
well,
not as big of an
depending on what
issue.
It was, you know, how intense it was.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that's kind of cool about this movie, it gives you an hour, almost an hour by hour, day by day account.
Oh, yeah.
Every once, and it's to me, it was a little confusing because I was like, it's only been that long? It'll pop up on the screen every once in a while. Tuesday, August 20th.
No, it was December.
Tuesday, December 20th, 10:15 a.m. And then later on, it'll be Tuesday, December 20th. 1:20 p.m. like that. And it seemed like Pamela Franklin took showers and changed clothes hourly
God,
or
she
something.
She had so many costume changes. Yeah, she was changing clothes all the time.
I think that's what was throwing me about the time.
Because she kept changing clothes.
She kept changing clothes like throughout the day, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I don't know why she changed clothes so much. When they do a sitting, she's supposed
to
be channeling the ghost or whatever. And he had her like hooked up to all these electrodes and whatnot so they could record her. See what's going on with her body. She was sitting in like a bodysuit, like a dancer's bodysuit, like a leotard. So then afterwards, I think she went and showered and she came back in a different outfit. And then when she was going to bed, she had on, you know, something else to go to bed in. But then she came back and she was wearing a robe, but it looked like a dress.
Yeah.
None of that matters, but it was very confusing, like you said, because it was, why are you changing so many times?
Yeah. It was that part was just weird.
Maybe it should have been drinking.
And it's like Roddy never changed.
Yeah.
He's wearing the
same
outfit
the
whole time, you know, and never slept. His character was interesting. He was just there to get the money and kind of turned his psychic abilities off.
Right.
He was trying not to keep trying to keep closed off and not open the whole time. You know, the whole time he was there and figured, I'm just going to cruise through here, get my money and get out because I don't want to go insane.
Yeah.
You know, and Clive Revel's character was kind of in disbelief. He was the skeptic of the bunch.
Right.
And Pamela Franklin was just open to everything, which proved her undoing. It's one of those movies that I hear a lot of people like, and which kind of did strike me as kind of odd in trying to watch it just objectively, not get sucked into the story, is that it doesn't seem a whole lot goes on in it. But like I keep going back to, the atmosphere and the moodiness of it is constant.
Yeah, it is. Well, and there's enough about the story that's intriguing. I mean, it's not just a ghost story. I mean, it is, but
yeah,
there's enough mystery to it.
Yeah,
and enough going on around the mystery of the ghosts and what ghost is it and blah blah blah.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's more of a mystery.
It is. So that's why I was so
ghost,
intrigued.
Than what
time.
We're used to as a ghost story.
I wanted to know who really was it and
yeah, and a lot of the modern ghost house movies or whatever. You see a lot of ghost stuff, a lot of special effects.
Right.
And this really relied on the location.
Yeah.
And the actors' reactions.
Yeah.
And a little bit of special effects.
Yeah.
And it was extremely effective.
Oh, absolutely.
Matter of fact, you know, I kind of want to go watch it again. Probably closer to Halloween.
Right.
You know, just because it does strike me as so odd a film that it is that enjoyable
mm-hmm.
with not a lot going on. But still, you're cruising through the whole thing and waiting, you know, and hooked on the story, you know.
Yeah. It was just a very intriguing story. I mean, it had a lot of intriguing elements.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I keep going back to, you know, got Roddy. And Clive Revel. I mean, he was great in it. And not being overly skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of the guys are just too, they play, you know, just a hard ass the whole time.
Yeah.
He was more scientific and matter of fact about what he was going to do and his beliefs in it.
Yeah. You know, one thing I thought that was pretty interesting, sometimes when they drop pieces of information in a movie.
Yeah.
It's dropped and you're like, oh, well, that's going to come back. We know that that's going to be something we're going to need to know later. Or that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that they drop in this movie, most of it does end up factoring into the story.
Yeah.
But it was never done in such a way that it made it feel like, oh, I'm going to have to know that.
Or, you know
what I mean?
Yeah.
At no point did I think, oh, that's an important fact. I'm going to need to know that for later.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a lot of movies that I watch, those things factor into
They kind of make you see it. Focus on it or, you know, like put it in your face.
Yeah, and nowhere did they do that in this.
No.
Even though it was put into the dialogue or whatever, it didn't get shoved into your face that way. It just factored in. And then when everything comes out in the end.
Movies used to be a lot smarter
back then. Right? So when everything comes out in the end.
Yeah.
And everything gets pulled together, you know, I felt like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I didn't get totally surprised by all of it because I kind of saw some of it coming. But at the same point, I was like, yeah, okay, I see that.
Yeah, now I don't want to give away the whole plot and go the whole story because it is a mystery. But I'm going to talk about it at the very end a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, this is the Batman connection in this. is two Alfreds.
Right.
Clive Revel, of course, did the voice in the animated series for a little bit. And when you finally see the owner of the house, who's been dead since the 20s, Belasco,
mm-hmm.
who is like preserved and embalmed, sitting upright
mm-hmm.
in a chair, it's Michael Goh.
Right.
From the Tim Burton Batman films. But, the weird thing, not so much a blooper, but kind of a goof in a way, he's sitting upright in a chair holding a glass of wine. He's been dead since the 20s. Why didn't the wine evaporate out of the glass? No, actually, that was on IMDb.
Was it?
The trivia and the goofs. That was one of the goofs.
Gotcha.
Another one that they pointed out was when they show, this is giving it away. When they show his fake legs.
Mm-hmm.
So if he died in 1923, they were like modern prosthetic legs.
Oh, were they?
Plastics and stuff, yeah.
That's funny. He was supposedly...
the Roaring Giant.
Well, right,
they called him.
He
was supposed to be
6 foot
five.
Far, well, but he was supposed to be so far ahead of his time, forward thinking. Because
oh, yeah,
of
he was
the
using things that hadn't been invented
in.
Yet. Materials
yeah. See,
that
there
haven't.
There you go. In the room that he was in.
His Alfred.
The special room that he was in.
It was
in.
Alfred. He got it from Batman. Bat gadgets, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I remember, I think the first time that I saw this was probably on Dr. Mad Blood,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of the movies we talk about on here, the first time
you
I saw
first
was
on Dr.
On
Mad,
Dr. Mad Blood. Thank you very much. And, you know, I could do a whole episode, I think I did on Horror Host, but just talking about the joy of waiting, you know, anticipating all week long, because before cable, mm-hmm. you know, before VHS was prevalent, before DVD, before streaming, before you could just watch a movie at anything you wanted like this now, you can. You had to wait for it to be shown on TV,
mm-hmm.
you know? And as a kid, loving monsters and stuff, you know, you wait all week long, watch Saturday Night Live. Well, first you watch Fantasy Love Boat, then Fantasy Island. And then the news, because it's Saturday. Then Saturday Night Live. And then about 1 in the morning, Dr. Mad Blood's on. And you hear that theme song and open credits, and you're like, yeah, you know. And Legend of Hell House comes on. Now, as a kid, I did not like it because there was no monster in it. You know, I wanted to see Frankenstein. I wanted to see the Wolfman, the creature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember him showing it. And, you know, some of the imagery still stuck with me
mm-hmm.
and all that. And I think that this is actually one of his favorite films.
Oh, really?
Or, you know, favorite of this genre. Mm-hmm. I thought I heard him say that one time. And now I can see why. Mm. Watching it as an adult later, you know, the appreciation of it. But anytime that I do see a movie again that I saw in Dr. Mad Blood originally, at some point I get that little twinge, a little wave of nostalgia, and have that that little bit of feeling hit me like a deja vu of the first time that I saw it, and that that anticipation or that just great feeling of seeing it for the first time on TV and stuff, you know. So a lot of those movies, I guess that's why those movies that I saw, I like to watch over and over again, because it gives me that feeling. And this is one of those. I like it a lot more now than I did then.
Well, you have a better appreciation for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, hey, anybody else wants to watch it, come on over. I'll watch it again anytime. You know? Come on over to the lounge. Bring your own cocktail. Now, there's a lot of other haunted house movies out there. And there's a few that we need to, I think we ought to do, watch a couple more. The original Haunting, I've never seen. Even though I've had it for years on DVD.
Right.
Well, like quite a few other movies that I have on DVD.
There are so many movies in this place you have not seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the lounge is full of them. The remake I did see in the theater. I think it was Liam Neeson, Catherine Zeta-Jones, a few other people. It was okay.
Don't remember seeing it.
It was. I don't remember who I went with. I don't know if I went with you or went by myself or went with somebody. I think I went with somebody. It might have been... I don't know. It was like,
well,
whatever
if
it was.
I saw it, I forgot it.
Yeah, it wasn't that memorable, but the original is supposed to be pretty good. Mm. So we should watch that. I don't think we need to watch the remake and do a compare and contrast with that one, because it's so much better a movie from what I understand. I would hate to see them remake this. I don't think it would have anything remotely. If they tried to remake it today, it would not remotely feel the same way. They would probably do it closer
to
the
book. Yeah,
with more graphic violence and more graphic sexuality.
Yeah.
Could be interesting, you know.
Well, having not read the book, I don't know, but knowing the author, maybe.
Yeah, but I really like the feel of this movie. It's one of those, there you go. Besides the atmosphere and the mood, it gives you a feeling. You know, it has a feel to it that's constant throughout the movie. And I really like movies that do that. As opposed to... I mean, I enjoy movies that just entertain with action or with horror or whatever, too. But there's a handful of movies that just have a feeling. And I can't describe it. I can't really explain what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think that people get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, it sets a mood and just kind of holds it. The ones that can hold that for the whole movie are successful.
Yeah. And this is the mansion or house that this is in is just beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge. And I think the outside was one shot, and the inside was a different one. Mm.
Do you know where that was?
I do not.
Yeah, I don't either.
Off the top of my head. I could consult the Oracle and find out. Or I could leave that up to you out there in podcast land. If you would like to know, you can Google that for yourselves. It's not important to the dialogue here.
It's not. It is a very beautiful place. That is all you need to know.
It's not one of the main houses that you see.
It's
not Oakley Court. Any the other ones that you see, like in the House on Haunted Hill or in the Hammer movies or anything like that. It's a different one as far as I know. But it is beautiful, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big enough mansion. It has its own chapel. And a big chapel, too. Not just a little room, you know. It's a good one to watch for Halloween, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not your typical Halloween-type movie, but it definitely lends the eerie atmosphere that you would want.
Creepy kind of atmosphere that, you know, you want to feel around Halloween.
Sure.
Hey, you know, that's what we ought to do. We ought to do an episode like top 5 or top 10 movies to watch around Halloween.
We could do that.
Could name them right now. No, we're not going to name them right now.
No.
Maybe we'll do that one closer to Halloween or a couple weeks before. Or maybe next episode. Who knows? Oh, you know, another thing I meant to mention earlier, talking about Richard Matheson.
Oh, yeah.
He originally wanted for the two leads, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor.
Really?
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
That would have been a completely different film.
Now, I'm not sure which. I mean, I'm assuming Richard Burton would have been the Clive Revel part.
I couldn't see
him being the Roddy's character.
No.
And Elizabeth Taylor would probably...
His wife?
I think she would have been the Pamela Franklin because it was more of a lead role.
Yeah.
Because the wife really didn't have a whole lot to do, except she had a couple little scenes.
Yeah. Wow.
And this is now them in the early 70s.
Yeah, yeah, I see that. You know,
because what was this, 73 is when this came out, so it was probably made 71, 72.
I can't even picture that. I can picture Richard Burton. I don't know that I could picture Elizabeth. I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm trying to remember what she looked like at this time. Because there was
period. I'm not even worried about the actual features. I'm talking about in the role. I don't know. That would be totally different.
Yeah, it would be completely different.
Wow.
Be interesting, but it'd be completely different. I mean, who wouldn't want to see Elizabeth Taylor get raped by a ghost? I mean, you know.
Yeah, you didn't mention that earlier. There's a ghost rape scene. Very weird.
But, you know, it's handled in a way that it wouldn't be handled today.
No.
What you see, the way it's handled is she's talking to the ghost, mm-hmm. and it's very roundabout way. She's answering the ghost.
Yeah. You never hear a ghost speaking. And
no.
You never know exactly what the ghost says, but you hear her into the conversation, so you can kind of deduct
she's basically saying, like, well, if this is the only way, or if this will cause you, if you will leave, if this mm-hmm. will satisfy you, will leave, or
she's
something like that.
She's trying to get the ghost to move on to the other side.
Yeah. She thinks the ghost is the owner of
Daniel.
The house. Yeah, Belasco. It's supposed to be his dead son.
Yeah.
Back up a little bit. They go to this house because the owner of the house, Belasco, was into Satanism and cannibalism and all kinds of sexual perverted depravities. And
pretty much any deviant thing you can think of.
Yeah, and
he was
like, 23 people or something got killed at this one event or party he had, and then he disappeared after that.
Right. So his body was never found.
They don't know
if he died or if he moved or whatever.
Yeah, so that's the big thing about this house, why it's called Hell House. Anyway, so Pamela Franklin's character is going to bed one night. She's been visited by a ghost a couple times mm-hmm. since they've been there. And she's saying these things to the ghost, and you're like, okay. So she cuts off the light, and she, you know, drops her negligee.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, in silhouette, okay, she's naked. And she gets into bed. And then it fades to black, right? And then the next morning...
She starts talking to the ghost and says what you said earlier.
Oh, yeah, but you don't see anything after that. You don't see the covers moving or anything.
Oh, no,
there's nothing suggesting sex physically.
Well, you see the camera, the point of view of the camera takes on as if you're the ghost, kind of. And the camera zooms in closer to her and the cover moves back to see her naked. And you see her.
But it's in silhouette. You don't really see her.
Well, but then you see her facial expression as if something is going on. And then it fades to black.
Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, it's very clear what's happening.
It's clear,
but
more
you're not
implied.
Seeing,
it's not graphic. You don't see her writhing like they would probably show today and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then the next morning, does she scream?
Yes, she screams and
like wakes
everybody
up and screams
comes in
and falls down. And they come in and she's laying across the bed with a cover, like covering her butt.
Yeah.
She's face down and there's like scratches and claw marks and stuff all over her back.
Right.
And then you find out what happened.
Yes.
After that, it's glossed over but told that she was basically raped by the ghost. I thought it was handled well.
Oh, absolutely.
It's insofar as it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't graphic, it wasn't in your face. You're led more to imagine what happened.
Yeah, and at no point did I feel uncomfortable seeing it like I would in a rape scene, you know.
Yeah.
I just felt like, wow, this is freaky.
Yeah, because it was like, hey, this is going to happen, and then, oh, it happened last night. It's like, you know the way it goes.
And maybe because it was a ghost and not like a dude.
And a lot of the movie is like that, though, insofar as it's suggested. And the creepiness comes out of that, out of your imagination of what happened or what happened. Now, don't get me wrong, there are a few scenes of stuff flying around and I think Roddy getting thrown across the room at one point. But they're really effective because they are so few.
Yeah.
And they come out unexpected. It's not like, oh, here's the next special effects scene.
Yeah, it's pretty simple physical stuff. It's not super camera special effects. It's not, you know, weird CGI kind of stuff. It's simple stuff.
Yeah,
but
it's
very effective.
It's unexpected.
Yeah,
because it's random throughout the film.
Yeah,
it's not
absolutely
boom, one after another, one after another, one after another. You know,
no, it was easy. Although there was the one special effect where she was doing her sitting, and it was the scientific one where
coming ectoplasm from out of her fingers.
Yeah, coming out of her fingers
and stuff. Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
It was neat.
It looked pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, because it wasn't overdone.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how they did it.
It was kind of subtle. you know, and you're wondering what's going on.
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
You
know? Well, and that's some kind of camera effect that I don't know how they did it. Maybe you do. I don't know how they did it back then.
I have to look at it again.
I'm not sure. I was watching it. But it was pretty cool looking.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, and I keep going back, and I'll probably repeat myself 20 times here, but I think the subtleness of the whole thing compared to the way they would have done it today is what makes it more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching what's coming up next. Where is it going? What are they going to do? Because nothing's happening. But, you know, some good acting bits, some good characterization stuff. And then there's a little special effect thing. There's a ghost. Yeah, something happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it goes on and something more intense will happen. And then it'll come back down. And,
yeah.
And it keeps that suspense going the whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
And at no point do you see a ghost ever, by the way.
No, you never see a materialization.
That's an interesting thing about this, too. There's never anything that you can see that's a ghost. You see stuff move.
Yeah.
You see that one ectoplasm thing, that whatever that was. But that wasn't like a ghost materialization.
No, it's kind of like a trail of smoke or mist kind of going from her hand to her other hand across in front of her,
something like that.
Going up into the air like a trail and winding.
And I'm not even sure what that was supposed to be exactly. They probably explain it better than I'm remembering, but anyway. So you never see a ghost. All the ghost stuff, when you say, ooh, there's a ghost, is done because you see a door open by itself or you see something, you know, shaking or whatever. But it was pretty cool. And I did like the way they did the ghost stuff when you get to the camera's point of view as if you're the ghost. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat to see.
It was neat.
Okay, now, if you want to see this movie yourself, which you should, it is available on Amazon. You can, it's not really, it came out on Blu-ray not long ago.
No.
Which, you know, I'd like to get the Blu-ray.
Is there any special features? We'll have to check it out.
I do believe I read about the special features. I meant to mention there's a commentary by Pamela Franklin.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
And maybe the director. I think so. And let's see, the Blu-ray, looking at it now for your information, $15.89. That's not bad.
No.
Blu-ray. DVD. You get the DVD for like $3.95. Hey, you know, hell of a price for it. I'd pick it up in a heartbeat if I didn't have it. Or even just to get a better copy for $4. Are you kidding me? And the Richard Matheson book is Amazon Prime for $10.54. Might have to get that for myself for a Halloween present. And there's various other incarnations of the movie, like on double and triple bills for different prices of DVD. But those alone, if you're just curious, get the DVD for $4. I want the Blu-ray because I enjoy the movie so much. And $15 for Blu-ray is nothing. Apparently, it is not out of print. It is still available. Well worth it.
Absolutely. You should definitely see it.
Yeah, and I think I might just do that. Might just pick that up. And the book, too. Another thing I wanted to mention also was the movie poster.
Oh, yeah.
The poster is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
A nice graphic of the skull over this house, and it's just really eye-catching.
You'll have to be sure to post that on Facebook.
Oh, I will. I will post... Definitely post that poster, as many different versions of it as I can find. Pictures of the book, pictures of the Blu-ray, pictures from the movie, the trailer. Definitely check out the Phantasma After Dark Facebook page.
And you can see the gorgeous haircut.
Pamela Franklin's hair.
Oh my God. Terrible hair. Terrible. And I am not one to really talk about hair, but that was horrible. But the poster was pretty.
The poster was pretty, yeah. Pretty. Okay. But yeah, I'll post as much stuff as I can on the and an album on the Facebook page for that. So definitely check that out. And in the meantime, try to find the movie and watch it. Like I said, it's a good Halloween movie, really suspenseful, moving along. It'll feel slow, as we've said before. You know, I keep talking about it and saying the same things over and over again, but it's so interesting to me, these aspects of it, because I'm watching it and it feels like it's slow, but I'm compelled to keep watching because it's so interesting.
Well, it's hard to say that it's slow when you're so compelled to keep watching it. So I think you're saying it's slow because there's not like action-packed stuff in the middle. But that doesn't mean that it felt slow.
Well, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is maybe to somebody who didn't enjoy it as much as I do, it might feel like it's slow.
Maybe.
Because it's not action rolling the whole time.
Everyone should watch it and find out for themselves.
That's it. You make your own judgment. Don't listen to me. Well, listen to the podcast, but don't listen to my opinion. You go ahead and watch it yourself.
Well, I don't have much else to
eat. Yeah, I think that's about it. I think it's probably going to be a little shorter one this time. Like I said again at the beginning, if you're in the area, check out all the cool Halloween stuff going on. Come out and see us at Monster Fest and stay for the movies that night and the music. And, you know, come out to the Narrow and see some of the cool horror movies that are going on there. And I'll be there for most of them. Us. Yeah, we'll be out there for most of them. And except for the ones that are going on Monster Fest weekend.
Yes.
And drop us a line on the Facebook page, Phantasmo After Dark, or at the email, phantasmoad@gmail.com. That's phantasmoad, all one word, @gmail.com. And hopefully we'll have some cool stuff coming up for the Halloween episodes here. And that's about it for me. How about you?
I think so. Well, you know, we have things we normally do. And I think this time you should ask me how this movie relates to Planet of the Apes.
Well, you know, I was just going to let this one go.
No.
Okay.
I want now, to impress everyone with my beautiful knowledge.
Okay, now let me set this up for anybody who hasn't listened to the podcast before. If this is your first time listening, well, hey, God bless you and thanks for listening. And I hope you'll listen again. We've been doing something for the last, I don't know how many episodes here, where we prove that the world does indeed revolve around Planet of the Apes. This is a thing that my buddy Clayton and I found out years ago, that you can connect almost anything pop culture back to Planet of the Apes, because the world does revolve around Planet of the Apes.
Right.
So at the end of each episode, whoever the co-host is for the episode, usually it's Phyllis or somebody else, will give me something from the film relating to the film, an actor, director, something about the movie, and I will connect it back to Planet of the Apes as quick as possible.
Because
so Phyllis,
Rob has all this knowledge in his head.
All this
and
useless information.
And I can never do this.
So we're going to change it this time. We're going
to
let Phyllis
do
it. And so, Phyllis, I would like for you to connect The Legend of Hell House back to Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
How's it connected?
I got to think real hard. let me think. How do we do this?
We can edit out all this lag time.
There's so much lag time because I'm thinking so hard. Oh, wait. Roddy.
Roddy. Apes. Done. Okay, thanks, Phyllis. Way
wow,
to go.
Amazing. Yay me.
Oh, woo-hoo.
That was hard. Mm.
So I think we'll end on that one then.
Look, Clayton, I can do it too.
I hope he listens to this one. Oh, that's about it for us tonight. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Good night.